cut dealing with noises. Have you ever, have you ever tried to explain to somebody? Have you ever really met a Jack Lasculli fan? Did you? You know, I just thought of. Have you ever met somebody who says, "I just can't wait. I just can't wait every morning to see Hugh Downs. So exciting." Yes, sir. The Advance of the Plastic Men. Me, King Kong. You, Richard Nixon. Right, now, it's getting out of hand. That's very good, I think. I'll light up this 7-cent guinea stinker. Oh, sport fans, we have a little sport news here for you. From Masinga, Mozambique. A local soccer game was interrupted in Mozambique for 30 minutes while the players filled up holes dug in the field by wild pigs. Later, play was held up 20 minutes when a man objected to spectators standing atop his father's grave, which was decorated with skulls. Referees then postponed the game because of darkness. Bring it on. Well, I want to salute sports fans everywhere, wherever they might be. Bring it up there, gang. Speaking for and about sports, friends, here's a note from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The listening ear has been established by the Lutheran Church here in Pittsburgh, enabling people to telephone any time of the hour, any day of the night, to confess when you feel guilty by phone. My dear, you are waltzing so well tonight. However, your mustache is tickling me. Is it my imagination, my dear, or are the draperies on fire? It's them damn candles again. Gee whiz, it's funny how these little sneaky things come out. Here's a little note here in the Patterson News. Thought you might like to know that men are now carrying beaded handbags. Oh, gee whiz. It says men are now carrying beaded handbags, and the person who wrote the piece is named Gay Pauly. I just thought you ought to know. Things are sneaking out everywhere. Hold it there. Hey, wait a minute now. That brings up a point here. In hoc auricula conch. Got a Latin teacher here. Says there's 17 different translations of that phrase you use. In hoc auricula conch. In est spittle lauk. Means everybody's got the right idea, but nobody's got the guts to do it. I'm sorry, I'm just quoting a Latin teacher. Here's another translation. In hoc conch in est spittle lock means what a drag this was. Well, you're going to tell me what it means now, huh? There's always some smart that was censored who will tell you what everything means. Here's in hoc in est conch spittle est lock agricola, meaning the world will little note nor long remember what we do here. Well, that's pretty true. And here's another one. In spittle lock S, conch agricola hoc M. Meaning, oh, for crying out loud, I can't put this one on the radio. You know, that's better. There you go. Oh, right in the... You had 4 years of Latin that means don't spit on the farmer. Well, I think that's good advice. I know some farmers, if you try spitting on them, you're liable to get a mouthful of your own teeth. They're very bad. In hoc, agricula conc, in est spittle lauc. Means don't spit on the radish farmer, my dear. You, it's a very different person. Bring me down there, please, please, will you? There comes Barbara Streisand in full sweat. Oh, she's in full sail tonight. She's wearing her mizzen spittle mask. Oh, hello, baby. The land 10 to you, baby. What an agent you've got to have. All right, bring it on. Has it ever occurred to you that Barbara Streisand is every Marcia? In agricula spittle s lauk in hoc in means if you're gonna go anyplace, hey, look out there, you gotta have connections. What the hell was that? Just went through the studio here. One of them new Italian cars. By the way, I saw a little Fiat the other day with a big black hand painted on the side of it. Woo! Woo! I saw a French Renault with something painted on the side, which I cannot describe because there are women and children listening. That's right. That's one of them cuckoo blades again. Good, very good. Did you like that singing? It's very nice. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think so. There are a lot of things to, you know, to consider. You know, this is the kind of way. It's August now. You can cut that out anytime you want. Hey, listen, speaking of strange native rights, we have a note here from Washington at 7 a.m. Every Friday, His Imperial Majesty Moro Namba Kugre, Emperor of the Maasai's, enters the courtyard of his palace in the Ugadagadugadu to receive the Oath of Allegiance. Ugadagadugadu. Boy, they've got a fantastic Howard Johnson there. Kneeling ministers, advisors, and servants, the National Geographic Society reports, loyally pour dust over their heads and repeat solemnly. Would you give me a little echo chamber there, please? We are dust before thee, O eternal chief. Ugamugu. And what's the phrase name? Let's see. Umgawa. Well, you know what Umgawa means? It means two-wheeled Sears robot bicycle. And, you know, that's been put in a lot. They've been kidding Cornell Wilde for years with that phrase. You know, he's been chased by more guys waving spears hollering Ungawa than anybody this side of a Belgian missionary. Ungawa. I don't know why I'm so rotten tonight. You know, I just, you know. Boy, I've got 17 pressure groups now already planning a telephone. Yeah. Drums roll, one string guitars, wine, and antique rifles are fired. This is every Friday before the chief. We are dust before the eternal chief. Later, warm beer is served. There's always a flaw in every ritual. Warm beer is served. I don't know whether you've had warm Maasai beer, friends. It's made of the spittle of elderly oxen, fermented over grapes. With dead raisins. Let's see. Later, warm beer is served in the palace while the 300-pound ruler reclines in his throne, which is a converted barbershop chair. Now, if this hadn't come over from Washington, from the International News Service, about 15 pressure groups would be after me already about that one. But that's the truth. The royal ceremony has enlivened the capital city of Upper Volta since the 16th century. It is the last remnant of the Maasai Empire, which once dominated much of West Africa. And, says they're going to do away with the ceremony soon. So as soon as the chief goes, he's going to be an old man, they're going to do away with that. They're going to replace it with a better ceremony. Speaking of native rituals, do you know, friends, that you can now buy a perfect replica of a transistor radio? It's an AM/FM transistor radio with little dials in the front and the whole bit, except that it's hollow, and it contains one full pint of scotch. It says an ideal Father's Day gift. Jeez, poor old father. What a stumble bum he is. Nothing is sadder than father disguising his scotch to make it look like he's listening to Cousin Brucey. Bag to the ears, falling down the stairs. Well, at least, you know, it's good to think that it's a little receiver like that, a little transistor set. He could get a 17-inch color TV set, you know, and a whole scotch. And then think what he'd be like. No liver. Hey, do you ever have the feeling, you know, what we ought to do is go out for a ride, huh? Blow the stink off. What's the matter? Oh, is it time to make a station break? No, good. Here's a note, says, black. Here's a guy who was arrested in Cincinnati driving his convertible. Seated on top of the back of the front seat, and he was driving with his bare feet on a steering wheel. Well, it's not so good. Oh, listen, my Uncle Carr used to drive sometimes all the way home from Winnetka, Illinois, laying on the front seat of his car. Couldn't even see out. He'd just drive with one finger. His car found his own way home, you know. Well, all right, gang. All right, bring it on there. We're all set for tonight's story. Are you ready? Very good. You remember as we left the little house halfway up the next block, the old man had just reached for the bread knife and had just said, yes, a little family drama, just like the kind that you and I live in all the time. Do you have the beautiful people look? Do you talk through your nose? Do you dream of a date with Truman Capote? Can you imagine having a little heart-to-heart talk at the Horn and Hard Art with Susan Sontag? Oh, you are so romantic tonight, my dear. Fist fight with Norman Mailer and his 18 friends, the middleweight contenders. Have you noticed that all fist fighters, all boxers today want to be writers, and all writers want to be boxers? It's always thus. Every man should stick to his last. You'd get a fat nose, Normie. Everyone should stick to his last. How is your last doing, gang? I demand the floor. Hold it there. Oh, a point of water there. Gee, I can hardly wait for the convention. Oh, boy, I bet there's going to be more. Brack. I bet there's going to be more excitement. I can hardly wait to hear, you know, when they turn up a PA system and you hear that great big crowd, you know how they crowd. Oh, Barbara Long wants to be a football player. Are you kidding? Have you wondered what happened to Barbara Long? Los Angeles Rams. That's why she ain't writing for The Voice anymore. The middle linebacker. She sure backs that line. Oh, Barbie. Well, let's see. Yes. I'm sorry, the convention. Oh, no, wait just a minute. I've got to tune up here, my Hogan twanger. That's pretty. Let's try that again. I play one hell of a Jew harp. All right, now, the convention, yes. I can hardly wait. We're on the eve of another great, historic, dull Republican convention. Although it doesn't promise to be dull. I understand they've got the guys that are going to make messages in the sky with the airplanes. Oh, yeah. Oh, I've heard a lot of talk about that. Fireworks and all that business. Richard M. Nixon claims all that the Rockefeller's claims are sheer bogus. And Rockefeller makes the claim that all of Nixon's claims are cockamamie bogus. I mean, you know, he's more of a New Yorker. So, 6-1, after the other. I personally, my feeling about it is that, shucks, I haven't thought what my feeling is about it. I'll have to think about my feeling here for a while, friends. I mean, it's ambivalent or equivalent. Or ambivalent. That has to do with enzymes. I'm sorry. I'm not in the enzyme bag tonight. However, I can hardly wait for the first moment when Walter Cronkite, you know, he's a very concerned type. He's going to have his earphone and plugged in. And he's going to look out and peer out over the whole nation. And you're going to hear the first sounds when they turn up the gain, see, in that great big convention hall in Miami. And I don't know whether you know anything about Miami in the summertime. It's not as hot as you think it is, actually. But, you know, they're not very far from the Everglades there. And the real alligators. And, you know, and just offshore lie the real barracudas. And a couple of stingrays. I mean real ones. I don't mean the kind you get at your friendly used Chevy dealer. I'm talking about real stingrays with a big old tail there. And they're going to turn that gain up, see? And the excitement will begin. One solid week, and you hear the sound. That's the sound of the little short, fat ladies with printed dresses. All of whose husbands own Chevy dealers in places like Olathe, Kansas. And are now representing the nation. Scary thought. Speaking of little short, fat ladies with printed dresses, friends, this is WOR. And this is Radio Free Broadway. Hi, George. How are you? It's all right, George. Nothing much to get excited about. This is Radio Free Broadway, and this is me. And I think we ought to have a musical interlude tonight on the other one there. Saluting Jessica Dragonette. Has been censored again in the good old summertime. Yes, sirree. We'll buy all them Carvel ice cream cones. We'll stop at the Howard Johnson for lunch. We'll have some of them rubber clams once again with a little touch of raspberry sherbet. Oh, in the good old summertime. Oh, the Mets have lost 5 straight. The Yankees are 7 games down in second division in the good old summertime. Mayor Lindsay is flying all around the country. He's out there making points. While we sweat and stew in the old fun city in the good old summertime. Yeah! Oh, raspberry! In the good old summertime. Richard M. Hughes in the good old summertime. I mean, it's bad enough being a governor, but a governor of Jersey. The Garden State. You think that's funny? You know what state do you think is called the land of opportunity? All right. Ouch! Right on my foot. That's all right. It's bad foot. That's okay. I busted my toe. And I got a woman. Kicking an old lady. Boy, she had the hardest bottom. Left out at the in the good old summertime. Wearing iron drawers in the good old summertime. Well, there's a lot of people who that. In the good old summertime. Oh, yes. All right. Our time to tell the story there. Okay? You want to hear the story? All right. Gather around. It's going to be one in exceedingly bad taste. Might as well warn you. Oh, yeah. Every year about this time, see? I mean, it's August now. August is traditionally the hottest month of the year. People get the itch the worst, you know, of all. No, this is a terrible time for the itch. Are you aware that more people are born? And have you ever looked at a curve of the dates of when people are born over the population curve? In other words, are there more people who have, let's say, birthdays in March than have birthdays in February? Well, I don't quite know how to say this, but because of the nature of August, and August is a very sensual month, it's one of the worst months for that kind of stuff. I'm not advocating anything out there, friends. It is. Did you know that? Do you know that August produces the largest number of people in the population in general than any other month? I just thought I'd warn you. I mean, it's early enough in August to think about it. Make a few plans, lay a few plans, you know. Just to think about it for a minute there. I don't want to make any accusations, but it's a funny month, and August has always had in my family when I was a kid. August was the month that we always took the vacation. The old man would get the second 2 weeks in August, which was the hottest 2 weeks. See, he had the belief that many Americans have that if you get away from home during the hot weather, that somewhere, wherever you go, will be cooler. Well, we used to go to this place called the Lower Depths, Michigan. And, you know, it's this lake called Hellhole. And we would go there, and the temperature there, even in the winter, would be like 105, although it was frozen. And we would arrive out there, and you could smell the lake for 4 miles away when we're coming. Because by that time, you know, all summer, the lake is fermented, and all the toads have died, and the new toads have not yet come in, and you know, large numbers of rattlesnakes have passed that way. And, oh, did you know that there's a lake in Michigan? I'm going to tell you a story about a lake, friends, if you think you know about lakes. And you're a vacation type. You're out there, you know, messing around. But when I was a kid, my old man had a friend named Mr. Selkie. We were always instructed to call him Mr. Selkie. Well, Mr. Selkie... Selkie, it's with an E, friends. Mr. Selkie looked a little bit like Boob McNutt. And, I'm sorry, he did. Nothing wrong with that. Boob was very famous. I don't know many people who got famous, you know. Well, I didn't mean that to be funny. It's not my fault. Well, Hubert Humphrey looks like Mr. Magoo. I don't think that's funny. It's just a fact, you know. Yeah. Well, Nelson Rockefeller always reminds me of a guy that does a denture commercial. And he just has that look. Those big teeth smiling all the time. He's got a kind of funny smile. It's like it's, you know, hooked on over his ears with little wires. But that's, you know, neither here nor there. I'm not putting anybody down for their smile. After all, they tell me that Lincoln had such a rotten smile, he never smiled. I mean, he had the kind of smile that scared little kids. Oh, yeah, you know. And so, you know, I'm not putting anybody down. They tell me that General George Washington had a smile that was fantastically bad. You've seen pictures of him. Oh, well, you know, once in a while when you get a dollar bill, you know, you see, take a look at the picture on there and you see. And why he didn't smile is he had wooden teeth. You know, that doesn't get votes. I mean, you stand up in front of the crowd and you grin, you got a lot of teeth made out of birch bark. You know, they just... I'm sorry, Lee. You're still thinking of Boob, huh? Well, nevertheless, Mr. Selke, you want to hear about old man Selke. Well, you know, a lot of things happen in August. One of the worst kinds of things is that, of course, it gets hot. We all know that. And the heat and the summertime has fermented the blood and the glands have been working all summer. And all kinds of wild things happen. I remember Selke lived about half a block away from us when I was a kid for a while there. And Mr. Selke, we'd go down to play in the basement all the time. He had this wife named Clarice Selke. And Clarice was one of these kind of ladies that looks like a hatchet, you know, with feet. She was. She acted a little bit like that, too, because he later hit her on the head with a garden hose and left. But that's another story. He had one of the first plastic garden hoses in the neighborhood, and she was, you know, sitting on the front porch one day. This is one of the neighborhood scandals, you know, that she was a notorious yabberer. And she was one of the natterer types, you know, always constantly complaining and always yelling at Ed Selke. And he's out there wearing his tin can on the top of his head. Well, you know how Boob McNutt wore that can on the top of his head? And everybody had told him he looked like Boob McNutt, so he got this can. He'd wear it on his head once. So when he's home from work, he never wore it at work. Boob McNutt wore a tomato can on his head. Don't you know that? Notary Sojak to you. So he's standing out there in the yard one day, and, you know, it was a nice, hot August day, and the birds were out, and the trees are hanging low, and we had those cicadas in the neighborhood. Greek family. And at night, around about 4 or 5 o'clock at night, they'd start keening. You know, the Greeks go great for keening all the time. And they'd start keening like mad. You'd hear them all over the neighborhood. And of course, they were also bootleggers. I don't suppose you ever heard of a Greek bootlegger. You heard the time their garage blew up, don't you? They had this Nash. And it was just a prop. And under the Nash, they had the hole dug out in the floor, the bottom, and they were making Greek wine or something there. Terrible wine. I don't know why any bootlegger bothered to make that Greek wine. You know, you can use it to paint your house with and all that stuff. What? Poo, poo, poo. Isn't that what the Greeks say? Chutzpah. That's another Greek term. Meaning get off my foot or I'll kick you with the other one. That's an interesting thought. But, well, I mean, there's no accounting for the Greeks. And at night, the cicadas would start keening and Ed Selke standing on the front porch on this night, and Clarice is on the porch. Was Nagu? Uzo? No. That's a Greek paint remover. That's not the same as Greek wine. And the Greeks, anybody that believed feta cheese, it's, with grape leaves on it. Good heavens, I'm telling you. Did I ever tell you about the time my grandmother got drunk? I had a grandmother, you know, who never drank in her life. I won't say that exactly. She got hung on something called Hattacol. You remember Hattacol. Did you ever hear of it, Tom? Hattacol? It's a blood tonic. It was a kind of a Midwestern, how can I describe it? Kind of a Midwestern Geritol. And it was called Hattacol. I suppose you can still buy Hattacol, but I guess it was about 120 proof. And it was for Baptist ladies who didn't believe in drinking. And this was their way, you see. And they take their vitamins in snifters. And my grandmother got involved with this Hattacol stuff. One night she fell down the stairs because she had too many vitamins in her, you know. There's a lot of vitamins in Hattacol. And she fell down the stairs and claimed it was because she had had a bad batch of dandelion greens. Well, you know what dandelion greens will do when they're fermented. You know, they make dandelion wine. And she used to make dandelion salad and sauerkraut and all that stuff until she got on the Hattacol kick. And after that, she was just no damn good. Went downhill, and Clarice is standing on the front porch that night that it happened, and poor old Ed was out there sprinkling the lawn. And the only way she could get him to sprinkle the lawn, she had this Donald Duck sprinkler head. It was like the head of Donald Duck, and you screw it onto the front of the hose, you see, and it looked like Donald Duck was squirting out on the lawn there. So it was kind of fun. And he's out there squirting along with his Donald Duck head, and Clarice is standing on the porch. And the kids were all out. We were all playing ball and, you know, knocking the fly balls around. And Mrs. Stryker was hiding behind the ecru curtains in her house, waiting for a foul ball to get hit on the front porch. And she always wore a fielder's mitt for that, you know. And she had one hand on the phone all the time to call the cops, and the other hand had the glove waiting to field the ball. And she had over 348 tape-covered baseballs that had been hit on her yard for, oh, maybe eight generations before. So the neighborhood is all going on pretty calmly on this night. It was very hot, just fantastically hot. It was 105 or something. Mosquitoes, you could just reach out and grab maybe 40 or 50,000 mosquitoes just with one grab of your hand, you know. They were just out there. And all through the mosquitoes, the bats were flying. Yeah, typical of the Midwestern. You don't know about Midwestern nights. They're very different from Eastern nights. And you could hear down the street. We had this evangelist down the street. And he had this tin shack. And there was always another evangelist in there. Every couple of weeks, a new one would come in. And they'd have red, white, and blue signs out there. And the running watch cry of the evangelists were that we were now under a godless government. And they're still saying that, you know. The sellout godless government. And you could hear them down there. There was one who would come in once in a while called Peg Leg. And he would stamp up and down on the podium there by the lectern with his peg leg. And it was kind of a Midwestern, biblical, Bible-thumping, fundamentalist Ahab. And he'd yell and holler, and his face would get red. And everybody would go down and watch Peg Leg for a while. And then there was a revivalist would serve ice cream because all the kids would go down there by the measure. He had a fantastic conversion rate among people under six, always converting down there. I converted to seven different religions in 1 month alone, one time. And they said, the conversion rate is big. And Ed Selke is out on the front yard this night wearing his tin can hat, and the old man is sitting on the front porch reading the sport page. And about this time of the year, the old man would shift gears from looking at the current standings in the league. Because by now, you know, all hope is gone. Usually about this time of the year, everything has settled down. The dust has finally settled down. And it became quite obvious that once again, the White Sox would nose the Brownies out for eighth place. And it was always a constant battle between those two teams as to who would be the last in the league. Because, you see, being second to last in the league is just being bad. But being last, people have a sort of kind of commiseration for the last team in the league. I remember, you know, that at one time, the White Sox were so low down in the league that you could get any White Sox ball player to speak at the Kiwanis Club for $4. And, they were always last place, you know. And they would come and they'd wear their baseball suit. And have you heard what Satchel Paige is doing now? Well, Satchel Paige is running for office. Yeah, wherever he lives, he's running for office. And believe it or not, he's running for councilman or something around there. And he goes around wherever he is running for councilman. And he, hello, Jack. Wherever Satchel Paige is running for councilman, he appears wearing his old Cleveland Indians baseball suit. He wears it on the street. You know, he walks down the street. Oh, yeah, I'm not kidding. It's a true story. Old Satchel Paige, see? And I saw a picture of Satch. And he was shaking hands with a guy in the barbershop. And here's this guy sitting there looking with sort of a dumb look on his face. You know, the guy who's getting a shave there. And his eyes are popping out because, you know, it's not every... It's the kind of thing you just don't really believe is happening to you. You're lying in a barbershop chair getting your chops scraped, you know. And that's kind of a silly position anyway. You're looking up at the ceiling, and all of a sudden, Satchel Paige, wearing a Cleveland Indians baseball suit, is shaking hands with you and asking for you to vote for him for city councilman. That's one of the kind of things that makes guys go on the, you know, on the pledge. So Satchel's walking around there wearing his suit, and there was this one guy. I'm telling you little stories here. This is kind of a silly show here tonight, isn't it? You like this kind of show? Well, there was this one guy, this one evangelist would show up who had been a fireman in his early days. And so he would always show up wearing his fireman suit. It was a kind of a symbolic thing. And he had wore this long black raincoat with a big red fireman's hat. And he would carry this axe. You know, fireman's axe with the big thing and the painted red and all that stuff. And when he would open up his revival campaign, for those of you who never saw a really good revival meeting, you've missed one of life's more juicy experiences, I'll tell you. It never stops. And he would show up, you see, and he had bought somewhere this old fire truck. And on the side of it is painted in big red letters, God, are you saved? Have you been redeemed? And all that stuff painted on the side. And then on the other side, he had a big sign. And it said, Fireman Fred, whatever his name is. I'm inventing a name here. It was Fireman something. I don't want to, you know, the guilty may be still around, so I don't want to infuriate the guilty. Let's say, Fireman Fred, tonight we'll put out the fires of hell. And you see the symbolism, don't you? Okay? And that he would, the truck would go through town, see? And there'd be a big thing telling where he's going to be, see? And all of his heavenly angels would be sitting in the back on top of the ladders on this fire truck. And they'd all be wearing little fire hats, little Texaco fire chief hats. And they would go through town. I think he was sponsored by Texaco or something. But what's the matter? Well, now, wait a minute. You think you heard black comedy? I'll show you some black comedy. Listen, these guys that write this stuff are mere children in my garden. I write the blackest comedy. So he would come down through town. I remember... would come to, and would have the siren going, see. They'd ring the bell, and he would not ride with the truck, see. He was a very big theatrical type because he wanted to make his big appearance that night, and he would, this truck would go through town, it would ring the bell, see, and the siren would go, and they would go tearing through town like 70 miles an hour. They would get this special permission of the police chief, you know, to pretend like they're going to the fire. And they would go tearing through town. Now, the town was filled with 17 million guys who did nothing after they got home from work but wait for the sound of a fire truck. Like my old man, see? He was the most confirmed fire truck follower. I'll tell you, he was like a vulture, you know? The minute the fire, you would hear him miles away. He'd run out, fall down the stairs, get up and run into the Oldsmobile, throw that baby in gear, and he would be gone. And he would come home all covered with smoke, with his clothing torn, you know. Another great fire, see. So this was the premise on which they based their pitch. They knew that half the guys in town were fire wagon chasers. And so about 8 o'clock that night, they'd start this thing. Woo! They would go roaring through town with a bell. Dong, dong, dong. Woo! Dong, 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 dong. Woo! Well, guys would come pouring out of houses for blocks around, you know, and they're... Oldsmobiles and their Chevys and all that stuff with the kids in the back seat, and they would follow this crummy fire truck with the red lights going, and they would follow them right to the tabernacle. And these, oh, you never saw such a production. These people would jump out, these angels, you see, they had sort of heavenly angel robes that looked like fire. You know how firemen wear these long raincoats, and they would jump off the truck, and they would run with the hose, see? They would run... in the hose, and everybody would roar in there. It was a fantastic production. And the place would be dark, absolutely pitch dark, and set up by the stage where Fireman Fred would work. They had all kinds of fancy lamps set up to look like fires. You know, they had the screens. It was psychedelic, very psychedelic. This makes the electric circus, believe me, look like Roseland. And he had all electric stuff going, and the people would pour in there, and they would grind out. This old siren would be roaring, and they would be hitting bells. And the people would be packed into this joint, just bulging, see. And then at the last moment, when the flames are rising higher, they had a guy running the control board. The flames are going up there. There would be this boom, a tremendous roar of thunder. It was all recorded, but, you know, it was very good, you know, because it was very loud, and this was a tin shack anyway. There'd be this big roar of thunder. And a light would come on the stage, and there is Fireman Fred. And, you know, the lights are on him. He's got this big red fire chief's hat. And he's got this hose and he's got this axe. And they would pretend like they're turning on the water, you see. And he had some kind of light gimmick. It didn't really squirt water, but it looked like it. We go, shh. He's squirting the water all over. And the flames would die down. And then the lights would slowly come up. just enough to make it very obvious that you were in the presence of a dynamic performer. And Fireman Fred would then stride down the center pathway of that sawdust trail, carrying his fireman's axe, and he's carrying his symbolic fire hose. And then his first words would come out. I smell smoke. I smell the smoke of hellfire and brimstone. And all the parishioners would sit there, man, quivering in their chairs. And he'd walk up and down and look at the crowd. And I remember my Aunt Teresa sitting there in her print dress, you know, and she's got her knit bag. And he's walking down that aisle, that sawdust aisle, and he's carrying this symbolic fire hose, and he's got that great big red hat on him. And I hear him, I can hear him now, hollering, I smell the smoke of brimstone. And everywhere I look, I see sin. I see sin, and I can smell the sparks. I can smell the fires of hell of belching out of them fiery furnaces. And whenever you smell that brimstone, the devil himself has been here. And he'd look around with his eyeballs glazing. And somewhere off in the distance, one of his heavenly angels would turn on the smoke machine. And there would be a puff of smoke over the audience. And tall, skinny guys with skinny necks and red noses would leap up and holler, Amen, brother, amen, I smell that smoke, amen. And Fireman Fred would stalk that brimstone. He would stalk them hell fires for 45 minutes, squirting that hose in corners, snuffing out sin, snuffing out the tracks of the devil, until there wasn't a dry eye in the house. Everybody's bones were turned to pure raspberry jello. And then the lights would go out. Just as he's reached a peak, a climax, the people are quivering on the edges of their pews. The lights would go out. And once again, you hear the sound of that fantastic roar of that lightning bolt hurled by Satan himself. And Fireman Fred would leap up on the stage. And he would look out into the darkness beyond the edge of the city dump. And he would holler, I hear you, Satan. I defy you. I defy you to do that again. You're hurling them lightning bolts at these good people. And he'd sit there waiting for another thunder. Another bolt from Satan. Satan, are you hearing me? I will count to three. I will give you just three counts to get down on your knees, Satan. You are getting a beating tonight by these good people. These good people of Crabapple, Indiana. Who are going to listen to your talk no more, Satan. Are you hearing me? I'm going to count to three. And then the guy in the background turns the wind machine, you hear. Satan has a loud little blast on a fiery furnace to let Fireman Fred, he is a hearing. All right, Satan, I'm accounting now. One. And then he would turn to the people. Do you hear that, good people? I'm giving Satan just three counts to get down on his knees. And if he don't get down on his knees, we's going to have to really get after him. You hear me, Satan? I'm a-counting again. You just got two more counts, Satan. You hearing these good people? Here's the second count. Now you hearing this?
true!
Fireman Fred would turn with a great big old red hat and his eyeballs are shining. And you could see all his heavenly angels crouching with the collection plates waiting. Waiting to milk this crowd right down to the very last sou.
All right, Satan. I'm about to say three. Are you down on your knees, Satan? If you is down on your knees, I want to hear some kind of sign from out in you. Come listen. And if you don't get down on your knees, these good folks are going to strike out and they're going to wipe you from the face of the earth.
Are you ready, folks? And they're all sitting leaning forward. Waiting. That hot August air is pressing in. And down the street, Ed Selke is sprinkling on his lawn. Clarice is nattering at him. He is about to make his strike for freedom. He is hearing his own Satan up there on the porch and nattering away at him. That lady, what looks like a hatchet. Yeah. And Fireman Fred is peering into the darkness beyond the city dump, past Friendly Fred's used car lot, past the Bluebird Tavern, past Flick's Tavern and all those other hell holes of sin and degradation, past the pool room, where you can hear the sound of them pool balls are clicking together. The sound of Satan's eternal game with poor fallen man. You can hear the crash of the bowling pins down at George's bowling alley, where the unredeemed are down there laying them Brunswick bulky colander bowling balls down those long alleys, hitting them poor little pins around, taking, the word of Satan lightly. And then Friendly Fred would lay it on him. Big old Friendly Fireman Fred, with his fire truck sitting out in front of the tabernacle, with his heavenly angels crouching in the wings, waiting with their collection buckets. Fireman Fred would climb up on his fireman's ladder, which had been placed in the center of the stage, with red rungs. He would climb to the very top, and he would say, "All right, Satan! I'm up here now on the top of God's fire ladder. And I'm looking you right in the eye, and I'm going to count three right now. And here it comes. I'm giving you 2 more seconds, Satan." Dead silence. Satan ain't saying nothing. He's sulking out there in hell.
"All right, Satan, here it comes. And I'll say three."
And then, suddenly, from all corners of the room, you could hear the sound of this fantastic chorus singing Rock of Ages. And instantly, Friendly Fireman Fred would turn to that crowd and say, "All right, friends, Satan has given us his word. He is still out there fighting. We are going to have plenty of money to chase him. I'm going to have money from each and every one of you to put into the service of that fight against Satan. Give me them dollars. Put them down. I want to hear nothing but folding money. I don't want to hear the clinking of coins. I want to hear folding money. That's the only kind of money that Satan can hear. Let's hear them folding dollars. Let's hear them $10 bills. We got to get Satan out of this town. You can hear him down there at the pool room right now. You'll hear him down there at that infernal hellhole bowling alley. Let's hear that folding money go." And those plates moved up and down the aisles. Just about that time, Ed Selke hit Clarice on the head with his Donald Duck hose and took off for Wichita, was never heard again.